Hey guys, my guest tonight, Ryan S. Wood, is going to be talking about UFOs and anti-gravity. Be right back. Grab your popcorn and snacks, find a comfy spot, take a seat or lie down, and let me transport you to a place of fantasy, ghost stories, ancient legends, odd creatures, alien encounters, and other magical topics. You may even decide to join the conversation. From faraway lands to your own backyard, with a small dash of pixie dust, turn out the lights and open your minds. The journey is about to begin. Good evening, everybody. Happy Tuesday. How are we doing? I think you said great. I'm doing okay. It's been an interesting day. Interesting couple of days. As you guys know, there's some transitions going on behind the scenes here, and it's all coming together nicely. Got that new cell phone I've been wanting to get for a while, and it's going to allow me to do a bunch of live stuff for you guys and for TikTok and get out, you know, and entertain, do what I do best. Anyway, my name is Charlotte. I'm going to be your host for the next hour. I'm also the owner of the California Haunts Paranormal Investigation Team based out of Sacramento. We are 45 strong up and down the state, and if you think you have a paranormal need, we can get to you. Might take us a few days, but we can get to you, okay? California is this really huge state, that's why. But if we can't get to you right away, we do have mediums on staff who can phone you and talk to you about what may or may not be going on, and if, in the case that maybe it is paranormal, we'll get out there right away, and they can calm down the energy until we get out there, in most cases, okay? All right, if you're watching from Facebook, and a lot of you are tonight, please remember to hit that follow button if you haven't done so already. And also during the show, if you like and you like what you see in here, give us a thumbs up. Show us some love. Show us some love. We'd like to see those. And chat amongst yourselves in the chat room. What that does is that puts you up, or puts us up in the FYP that Facebook sees and you know everybody else sees. And so Facebook will distribute the show out more, right? It's all about sharing, right? That's the other thing. Be sure to share the show. Share the show. If you're watching from YouTube, same routine. But over YouTube is interesting because all of our videos are there. There's over 1,000 videos sitting over there. They're all of this show, all different topics. I think you guys would be fascinated by what's over there. If you haven't done so already and you like what you see tonight, please feel free to hit that subscribe button. We'd really appreciate it. And again, come on into the chat room and have a good chat here. And yeah. And then we're broadcasting on Twitch tonight. And same things. It's all the same across the boards. Okay. So my guest tonight, Ryan S. Wood, he is a very intelligent dude, okay? He is a expert when it comes, you know, if you're going to talk about experts when it comes to that whole UFO thing, this is the guy to talk to. Also, anti-gravity. Anti-gravity. You know, are we using anti-gravity right now? Or, you know, the United States? In a way, you know, we are. I mean, I was thinking, even though it's not anti-gravity, but I was thinking about the Harrier jump jets that they use on the aircraft carriers. You know, because instead of taking off straight off the aircraft carrier, they're lifting straight up. But that's because the engines on there and the thrust, they're able to rotate the engines. They're able to rotate those things. And by rotating those, up they go, right? But that's kind of like, you know, bordering on anti-gravity, you know, for going up. But the kind of anti-gravity we're talking about tonight is what people claim to see with UFOs and UAPs. And that's what makes it interesting that, you know, if the U.S. was ever able to harness that stuff, that would be fantastic, you know, because it would literally be effortless to fly. Just like Star Trek stuff, right? We're talking Star Trek stuff. We're talking Star Wars stuff. But anyway, I'm not the expert on this. He's the expert on this. Let's bring him in. Let's talk to him about this. And let's get educated tonight, okay? Here we go. Good evening, sir.
Hey, thank you, Charlotte. I'm glad to be here and share what I can about gravity control and sort of, you know, give the history as I understand it and where we're at right now. I gather I can share some slides with the audience?
Absolutely, sir.
Let me hit the present button. Share screen.
You're braver than I am.
Yeah, well.
It's been done.
It's been done.
It's been done.
Let me just share the entire screen and.
Sure. I see you down there. I got you. I got you right there.
So do you guys see
there
that?
There we go. Yep.
Let me go to presentation mode. Can everybody see that still?
Yep. Oh, we got you.
Okay. Well. Yeah. So I'll try to give you a tour here of anti-gravity, and there's lots of debate as to the origin of gravity control. Fundamentally, I think we humans have solved the problem long ago in the early 60s, and I'll try to tell you a story about how that comes to pass. Okay. But a little bit of my background in history is I'm the son of Dr. Bob Wood, who recently passed away, like 3 weeks ago. He had started a gravity project in 1967 at the Douglas Aircraft Company. And it was really the result of his boss coming into his office and saying, you know, what are we going to do for the retirement of General Schriever, which is up in the left-hand corner. It was a missile guy. And his boss said, well, why don't we tell him how the UFOs work? And he said, well, let's work that up. And so we read like 50 UFO books and then convinced his management to invest, $4.5 million to go investigate how flying saucers might work. Mm-hmm. They didn't want to be behind when it came to Lockheed or others. So they spent internal money. They didn't have any access to any crashed hardware or anything extra. But and they worked on Michelson-Morley interferometers, and they did some abduction analysis research from various peoples, and then looked at novel propulsion. And they basically struggled along and didn't really learn anything fundamental. But this is sort of when I got exposed to it, when Stan Friedman was working for my father, and I'm 15 years old at the time. And my dad says, oh, we're working on anti-gravity. And so that was when I first got exposed to it, and that, it's been a long time. And then I did some experiments in a senior project in high school in 1974 on a gravity experiment. So I did my best to try to do a fun experiment around trying to change the speed of light, but I wasn't able to succeed, nor were the fancier people at Douglas Aircraft Company able to succeed. So. But that's my first exposure to this thing of gravity. But as part of the research, I went back to the 50s and found this guy, Dudley Bowen Clark at CE Labs. So this is out in Coachella Valley, out in Palm Springs area. And so in, he was like 1951, he had this team. Over 100 patents, this Bowen Clark guy, and he had raised $6 million, mostly from the government, the Atomic Energy Commission and Signal Corps and others. And they were all working down a dirt road out in Coachella Valley, you know, back in 51 when Palm Springs was like a glint in somebody's eye. It's just really pretty amazing, that there was so much work working on a gravity insulator way back then in 1951. This is the newspaper article in the Riverside, a newspaper that talks about him and his efforts. And then in 55, we have, and 56, and there's several newspaper articles. You have the New York Herald with a picture of Charles Dozier, another engineer at Convair's division of General Dynamics Corporation, working with spinning magnets. spinning permanent magnets or counter-rotating spinning magnets. And so this is the beginning of a lot of press and public press in gravity. And this is one of the classic ones. This, the G engines are coming by Michael Gladwich. And he was, you know, it mentions the Glenn L. Martin Aircraft Company, Lear's, Sperry Gyroscope, Gravity Research Foundation, and Clark Electronics Lab. So it's all the people in the 50s timeframe that are doing, you know, real aerospace work. This, the author, Michael Gladwich, is a very interesting fellow in that he was a Polish fighter ace, and then a French ace, and then a British ace, and eventually came to America and worked with a lot of these aerospace companies, had a very good reputation. And he also wrote a book about Antarctica, surprisingly enough, and what was going on in our Antarctica. So I find that interesting, but not that relevant. So you got these lot of newspaper articles, and then you have the Glenn L. Martin Company, which is, you know, then merged with Martin Marietta, and then it became Lockheed Martin. So in 1955, this group, the Research Institute of Advanced Studies, was formed, the RIAS group in Baltimore, Maryland. And it was headed up by this guy, George S. Trimble, who was the vice president of advanced propulsion. And he is the arch villain in Nick Cook's book, The Hunt for Zero Point, that was published in 2002. And many people have tried to get to him. He's dead now. But he basically said, no, hell no, I won't talk to you about any of my work at Lockheed Martin. But when you look at all these people that were in this RIAS group, you discover that these are world-class people. They all have Wikipedia pages in theoretical physics and in mathematics and electronics. And my assertion here is that this picture with this group of six people are the people that crack the code for gravity and basically found or solved the mathematical equations that allowed you to determine how to manipulate gravity, you know, a combination of general relativity by Einstein and Maxwell's equations and maybe some other metrics. So this is the key team in my mind. There may have been other teams in the Navy or earlier Nazi Germany, but this is one team which I believe figured out gravity control. I might also mention that in 1960s, the Nuclear Energy Propulsion of Aircraft, or NEPA, was canceled in 61. And it's the same contractors that were working on gravity efforts. And I suspect that there's lots of reasons to not build a plane with a nuke on it. Mm-hmm. But eliminating or understanding in a top secret way that we have gravity control, you know, eliminates the need for this sort of an application. The other thing that happened is NMR, nuclear magnetic resonance, which is how MRI machines work that allow imaging of your hand or your wrist or your brain or your heart and so forth. This pure research sort of shifted to an application focused arena to make products, which may have been closely linked to the nature of gravity. And then finally, the cover story is all these physicists were thinking about something, sort of got going, string theory in 1968. And so that, I think, pushed the physics community down the wrong path rather than gravity control. So that was one thing that happened. And then, you know, this will be a test for the audience here, you know, which Lockheed Skunk Works head said on his retirement, "We have the technology to take ET home. We know how to travel to the stars. There's an error in the equations. We figured it out and now know how to travel to the stars, and it won't take a lifetime to do it." And wow. And the other one, there's many in the intelligence community who would like to see this stay in the black, but not see the light of day. And so who said this? It was none other than Ben Rich, who is the head of Lockheed Skunk Works upon his retirement at UCLA in 1993. So this is one example of something where a human being says, "We found an error in the equations," which implies to me, you know, ETs don't give people equations. They give you telepathic visions and things like that, but they don't write equations down for you. And then I'll just put a shameless plug in for my book, Magic Eyes Only, which is a review of 103 UFO crash retrieval cases, 104 from around the world. Many of them sort of touch on gravity in some way or the other, but it goes from 1862 to 2008. It's on Amazon. It's referenced indexes. It's a tremendous, you know, if you believe that Grush is telling the truth, it includes the 1933 Magenta, Italy crash. This expands on that whole topic in a big way. I did the first edition in 2005. And Rich Dolan called it a classic, UFO classic, which I appreciate. So here's sort of a list of potential man-made anti-gravity craft cases. You know, some are stronger than others for a variety of reasons, but we'll cover a few of them.
Sure.
The Danielson, Connecticut case, the Eddie Laxon case, and the pyramid craft in the Calgary chiropractor in 76. So this is an interesting case. In November 20th, 56, this lady for, you know, 15 minutes saw this 25 foot across a craft with these multicolored lights with what appeared to be insulation and Tesla coil style balls at the end. Those seams are windows, and it had sort of a plasma glow. It had this sort of smell of maybe ozone possibly. But this is an interesting one. What makes it non-ET is all these Tesla-like coils at the bottom, which is, you know, they don't really need that. They have a more sophisticated approach. And then we also have the notion of counter rotation, which is a key theme on how you manipulate gravity. This is a July of 59 case where you have the top part of a saucer spinning in one direction and the bottom part spinning in a different direction. And it left a smell of like pepper or ozone, which is interesting, and a low hum. You know, hums are a dead giveaway, and smells, smoke rings, rivets, of course, people, things like that. There are a bunch of clues, antenna sticking out, are clues about man-made UFO craft. Lonnie Zamora in 64, you know, is sort of a flying butane tank, and it has this exhaust at the bottom. And the legs had holes on them and expanded. And the police officer really didn't see aliens. He just saw small figures. They clearly could be small humans. So it's unclear that, you know, it was really an extraterrestrial there. So that's in 64. So if you think they cracked the code in 60, they probably spent a couple years refining it, and then take them a year or two to build a craft. So 64, 66 are very believable that you'd have a operating saucer. The Rex Heflin photos in 65 are interesting. This is an old case, but, you know, smoke rings for various cases are all over the place. And they're in France, they're here. And, you know, I just don't think that gravity control needs a, you know, carbon-based, you know, exhaust.
Right.
You know, in any way, shape, or form. Charlotte, feel free to jump in or ask a question.
Well, I was going to say something. When I was little, probably the mid-70s, I grew up, you know, by an air base where they were doing repairs on craft. Okay. I also grew up near Aerojet.
Oh.
So I was kind of in the middle of this stuff. And as a kid, my dad had worked at Boeing. So he was he'd been an aircraft nut since he was a kid too. And he, you know, we would go look at the aircraft and all this, you know, at the airport. Anyway, I happened to look out my front door one night. I was walking past my front door, the screen, and there was something there. And it looked like, and I was intrigued by the woman with that plasma ship where she saw the rotating lights.
Yeah.
Because I saw something like that.
Oh,
it hovered. And not only that, the first thing I thought, oh, it's a Goodyear blimp. But it stayed there for like 45 minutes in the same spot.
Well, that's a long sighting. Yeah.
And it was rotating. Yeah. And being a kid, I don't know if there were anything in the paper about it or anything, but I remember seeing that thing and it had rotating color lights on it.
What city was this in?
Sacramento.
Oh, Sacramento. Okay.
Yeah. Like I said, this house is right smack between McClellan Air Force Base, which was a big repair facilities. Right. And then we had Mather on the other side and Aerojet.
Yeah. Interesting. Cool. Well, that's great. Another very powerful case is the story of Eddie Laxon in March of 66. So this is a Air Force mechanic who is driving to work, and he comes around the corner and parks and sees this craft landed about 80 feet away with a man outside. He gets out of the car and starts walking towards him, and the man scurries in and takes the craft off. But what's interesting is that it had, you know, English letters on the side, Test Lenticular 4768, and it has this huge electrostatic wick like a shark fin on it, and lights and things, and even a little horizontal stabilizer in the back, and it created this whirring, humming noise as it landed and lifted off. But, you know, he said, hey, the man had a cap, like an Air Force cap with English letters on it, in English insignia, and, you know, it was clear in his mind this was a human being in the military. This is his sketch of this strange aircraft. It was also, he said, what I saw was definitely not from space. The man was wearing fatigues and had a cap with a bill broken like an Air Force mechanic's wear, common English letters on it. So it is reported to Project Blue Book. There was another witness down the road that saw it as well. And so you have to sort of scratch your head and say, okay, so if you have a working aircraft in 1966, that means that you're limited in your technology. You can't use any advanced power semiconductors. You don't have any integrated circuits. You don't have any fiber optics. You don't have carbon fiber. You're not going to space, most likely. No superconductors, no graphene. So you're stuck with analog gauges and dials and high-powered vacuum tubes and motors and wires and things like that. So cryogenic systems were barely possible, maybe. And rotating machinery, and then barium titanate, which is a type of powder that they can make high-performance capacitors out of it, is possible. So you got to imagine that, you know, if this is what you're working with, you could do it in your garage today, if you know what to do.
What strikes me with these sightings too is that, you know, when you think about this stuff throughout history, everybody thinks about Area 51. You know, what were they doing out there? But none of these things are near Area 51. I mean, these are all over. So they must have had these crafts at all the different bases as well.
That's a good observation, or a secret bases where they can travel around.
Right.
I suspect that there are a lot of bases hidden that we don't know about. And this is another one up in California, out in Colusa, California, in 67, where this guy Bill was watching TV a little past midnight, and the TV starts buzzing out and so forth, and he walks outside, and the hair stands up on his arms and legs and head, and he sees this craft with these electrostatic wicks, these long, spaghetti-like things, and gooseneck lamps shining down, and these hooks, and he sees it, and then he saw another one too, and then it runs over to the power lines, hooks onto the power lines, and makes the power lines glow cherry red as it sucks up power, and then zips off and zips back. And then he finally gets significantly freaked out that he grabs his wife and kids and runs down to the neighbor's house and watches it from there. And then it sort of disappears. But, you know, these electrostatic wicks and electrostatics and hooks, you know, somehow they're capturing power in a way and using it in something, some fashion. Another clue. This is another interesting case in December of 72 in Venezuela, where you have sort of plasma glow-like exhaust that really isn't flames from a craft, but also these two hemispherical or half hemispheres with lightning bolts and electrostatic energy going back and forth. And there was actually two of them. They were identical. One came by after the other, and they were seen, you know.
Right.
The military likes tandem vehicles, you know, stay with your buddy. I suspect that's the way it works. I was going to talk about this crop circle, but I'm going to skip it. There was also in 95 in the Daily Mail, this, you know, pyramid shaped craft with all sorts of, you know, tubes and pipes that are underneath the craft. And it basically magnetized this guy's motorcycle, which wouldn't work forever. And it got him real sick, and he went to the doctor. And I suspect this is some sort of asymmetric capacitor, or basically a capacitor that it's in layers, and it builds in energy. You don't know whether or not it's the Giza pyramid geometry or the Russian 76.345 degree geometry, which is claimed to be more energy efficient. And then there's this cool case in up in Canada, where you have this sort of wishbone, or not wishbone, but dog bone, and it's slowly rotating around the center axis. And, you know, tens of thousands of small lit particles. It's not really represented well in the document or the drawing here, but it was 6 minutes, and then another identical craft appeared. So you get two craft that appear, which are kind of fun and interesting. And then, you know, Stan Romanek is a sort of a controversial abductee, which people may have heard of. You know, he was a common man with no physics experience, but he wrote these complicated equations down, which made some physics sense. But at the same time, his credibility was trashed because of, you know, child pornography apparently on his computer. So I think that's just another example of interesting. And then I mentioned a little earlier The Hunt for Zero Point by Nick Cook. This guy, George Trimble, is sort of the linchpin. He was the key part of the key team that cracked the code. And Nick Cook, who's a Aviation Week in Space, no, excuse me, Jane's Defense Weekly is in the UK, Jane's Defense Weekly reporter, spent his entire career reporting on exotic aircraft, got his contacts at Lockheed Martin in the press department to find this guy, George Trimble, and he wanted to interview him. And they finally did. He was living in Arizona, I think in 2000 or 1999. And Trimble basically said, hell no, don't ever call me again. And he basically chewed out the Lockheed press people and Nick Cook too. And this is not the first person. I think Tom Vallone, also the author of the book Electrogravitics, got chewed out as well when he tried to find him. But nevertheless, it's very interesting that he's so quiet about it. And my conclusion here at this point is that anti-gravity is bound up in counter-rotation, torsion, sort of twisting of magnetic fields and zero-point energy and nuclear spin and electrostatics. So that's the sort of key thoughts. So I'm, you know...
Being a layman in all this, so is it similar to like two batteries of polar opposites? Is that how it works? Because you talk about the twisting going on, so that wouldn't that cause the polars to go opposite, which would cause the lift?
Yeah, in a way, if you think of spinning magnets, maybe a north south pole opposite mechanically spinning, you sort of twist it up into a tornado like effect. It doesn't really work that way with magnets, but that's the concept, is that it's this torsion and twisting driven by magnetic fields and electrostatic fields that is where the secret of gravity control lies. And then there's also a great book, Unconventional Flying Objects by Paul Hill, which talks all about what we know from observations of flying saucers, from magnetic fields to plasma. It was written a number of years ago, but it's very scientifically oriented, and it's a good thing. The other thing that I'll draw everybody's attention to is a book called The Encyclopedia of Flying Saucers, which is on Amazon, that my father and I wrote, or edited, really, called The Encyclopedia of Flying Saucers, and it says, the highest classification for this document is top secret magic, no foreign dissemination, in human eyes only. So this particular document, the Air Force chapter is all stamped top secret, but one of the story goes that it was basically submitted to the Air Force about 1960, and it was mailed back to Tim Cooper in 1999, so nearly 40 years. But we did forensic testing of the paper and the ink and the pencil marks, and and all the various comments. It's the comments on the side that are very fascinating, and I'll show you that in a second. But lots of comments from Dr. Vannevar Bush, who was the head of Majestic 12 and worked for Truman. But the book itself is very written cases, UFO case, very well-written cases before 1960. Vernon Bowen was a copywriter in New York City at the time. And it's on capable. But this particular one, it says in pen, you know, in typed, Vernon Bowen says, but do all these things, UFOs, rule out the possibility that saucers might be man-made, question mark. And somebody in Penn, a reviewer in the Air Force or in the secret control group, says, this should not get out, which implies, in my mind, that in a top secret magic document that they have gravity control.
Right.
And so and this is in the early 60s. So that's the thing. And then there's other examples of the Air Force Research Laboratory giving, requesting proposals for propellantless field propulsion using high voltage, high frequency electromagnetic pulsations to induce mass fluctuations, gravity control, within electronic and ionic dielectric materials, which is basically asymmetric capacitors. So it's clear that the mainstream Air Force people probably aren't cleared for the ultimate truth, are trying to figure out how to do gravity control with dielectric materials. So,
do you think, you know, just to say on this, do you think that they have had help over the years from say these aliens on these UFOs, or is this something that they have somehow put together themselves?
Well, that's a great question. I think that the answer is sort of both, but mostly human. I mean, if you have a crash saucer and you don't know how it works, but you know that they have some ability to manipulate gravity, you can say to yourself, well, it can be done. I know it can be done. It's just a question. We got to figure out how they did it. And so they start to think and work on, you know, how you control whole gravity and apply more engineering brain power to it and then try to figure it out. So they may have had some super advanced crashed craft that they couldn't figure out, but they may have said some more mundane, less sophisticated ones where they might have a better grasp of what's going on. We're sort of left after all this sort of preamble of all these crashed, or these not crashed, but these sightings and cases where you get these clues for gravity control, with the dilemma of, well, what do we do now? You have to rediscover it. You have to prove it. You have to get into the open literature. Because if I give you 1% gravity, I can give you free energy. It can spin a flywheel. You can also potentially save the environment. It's completely disruptive and transformative. It'll take time, 10 years or so, but it could be a very big deal. So I don't mean to cut you off, but do you have a question or a thought before I go keep going?
I was just thinking about this. I was thinking about stealth technology. And, you know, I've been to enough air shows and been around that block to know that they've been, whatever engines they're messing with, they're fantastic, because I remember seeing a B-52 bomber, you know, come down across the runway. The thing doesn't make any noise. It's just dead silent. And by the time you hear it, it's too late because it's dropped its load. But getting the other stuff, sitting out here in my yard over the years, You know, I like I said, I have seen some weird stuff at night, because they would bring the experiment across at night.
Yeah.
And I remember the first time I saw a B-1 bomber come across.
Yeah.
And all it had was all you saw was the black shadow and a couple of wingtips that had the red lights on them when they were coming in. No sound, no nothing. It just came in.
Yeah. Well, it's very plausible that some of the B-2 craft and what Northrop is developing down in San Diego for the next generation, the B-2 replacement, mm-hmm. very much may have some truly exotic capabilities.
Mm-hmm.
So I, you know, I'm faced with this, you know, now what? Let's rediscover and prove it.
Right.
So I look at, you know, the T.T. Brown work of Tom Vallone is interesting. There's also this work of Charles Buhler on electrostatic differential, but it's very, very small changes in weight. It's sort of, you know, you're not going to lift a 2,000 or 3,000 pound thing. Mm-hmm. So that's fascinating. There's also some papers in Nature magazine back in the 80s, where you have these very high powered people of sparring back and forth between various theoretical tensor strategies in electromagnetic angular momentum. Ken Shoulders did work on gravity. This guy, Floyd Sparky Sweet, created this triode amplifier, which never went anywhere, but may have something to do with gravity control. This Madman Markham on the Art Bell Show back in 1995 is a very interesting interview, which you can listen to online. You know, as he's creating this Jacob's ladder and throwing parts through it and potential time and gravity manipulation. But again, the clue is that he's using high voltages, you know, 20 kilovolts and 3 million volts and electromagnets and creating this vortex. So this is just more clues about, you know, this is where the control is. And then you have the Roswell bismuth magnesium part with the aluminum iridium spaced every atom over, which is really mm-hmm. weird. And apparently it levitates at 5 terahertz. People are researching this and trying to figure out what's going on with it. But allegedly this is a part of a flying saucer, but you don't know how to make it. That's the challenge, is that you can't, with modern tech, you can't do it. And then George Hathaway investigated, and many others, John Alexander, this guy John Hutchinson up in Canada, and he did sort of a combination of technically assisted psychokinesis, and was able to embed spoons in metal and bend bars and all sorts of things that were truly odd and repeatable and observable. But at the same time, it sort of lost his edge a little bit and faked a few things and then ruined his reputation. Mm-hmm. But it's another clue as to there's something going on there. This guy, Boyd Bushman, was a Lockheed Martin senior scientist that Nick Cook interviewed, did a very simple experiment where he dropped a north-north pole magnet and north-south pole in these balls from like three stories up, and they fall at different rates. And it's been replicated by others. And so that's a clear clue that, you know, somehow magnetic fields are manipulating or absorbing or shielding gravity. I've got his FBI file, and there's loads of mentions of anti-gravity, but he also, you know, had a long interview about Area 51 and and aliens and so forth. And it's hard to verify this data. But it's interesting. I sort of go for the magnetic test as well. And then Poglinoff and Dr. Ning Li, they were down in Huntsville, Alabama, where they, Ning Li was. Poglinoff was in, I think, Sweden. But they did this spinning superconducting magnet test where they got this kilogram weight to lose some of its mass. But people tried to repeat it, and it didn't quite work out. I've got Ning Li's FBI file on the way to me. But Ning Li's death is kind of suspicious. She was hit by a car, and then her husband suddenly dies. There's a lot of weird aspects around her death. But you know, she had a national security clearance. She created this company called AC Gravity. Huge China interest, but she was Chinese. And so it's very interesting. And she was a partner with this guy, Dr. Tor, who continues to do all sorts of classified work on gravity. So that's something interesting. This other gentleman, Frederick Alcifon, on gravity control, he's a theoretical physicist, and his sort of key highlight is dynamic nuclear polarization, or DNP, can lead to gravity control. This is back to the nuclear magnetic resonance aspect of subatomic spins and particles. If you can manipulate these subatomic spins as torsional fields, like we mentioned earlier,
right,
you may be able to control gravity. And he has a book. There's another guy, Alexei Chekharov, who's done this gravity grab flyer, people try to replicate, but it's a hoax. But sort of, why do the hoax? Right. Another gentleman down in Fullerton, California, Dr. James Woodward, he's getting some interesting results. But again, these are super small, changes in thrust and inertia, and it's hardly the effect to lift a car off the ground. This guy Brandenburg, Dr. Brandenburg, he got a $200,000 contract from DARPA to do gravity control, just theoretically. He wasn't allowed to do any experiments, he did that work, and he also did some other experiments. He claims to have a 7% mass reduction in his experiments, but I'm not sure I believe it, because people haven't replicated it. He doesn't have patents. He hasn't started manufacturing stuff. But his key insight was this vortex of pointing vectors, which is gobbledygook speak, but it's all theoretical physics. And then also the tuning of the zero point frequency is another key thing that's possible in some of the literature. So this is in a triangular configuration. You know, a lot of these flying triangles are believed to be man-made craft, where you can may be able to tune or have a triangle as an asymmetric design. So again, this is another thing. Another exciting event happened this year at the MUFON conference, Mutual UFO Network, in July in Dallas, Texas. This metamaterial from Russia was revealed. It basically looks like a charcoal brick, a sort of aerogel, but it's super lightweight, and it's made of calcium, iron, copper, titanium, but there's no graphene. And this is a you know, it's an insulator. It's a a dielectric, and that's it promises maybe a massive K factor, which is how you make super powerful capacitors with a lot of energy. So they're analyzing that and doing more research, but that's fresh data. I'm also creating a custom private anti-gravity AI tool for my research and a few of my friends. So that's a useful tool that we're working on. So that's the broad brush on my work on gravity. Let me pause for a second and, you know, if you have any thoughts or questions or.
How far along, I mean, when you look at this stuff, because some of these craft that people have been seeing, like even myself, are from way back, you know, way back in the early 70s and stuff. How far along do you think they've gotten now?
Oh, I think it's very, very far along. I think it, well, first of all, it's sort of outside of government control and maybe outside of military control. It's sort of rogue in my mind, or nearly rogue or partially rogue. And so I think they have operational craft that can take you to Mars or outside the solar system. And so that's, there's lots of people that have, you know, the Secret Space Force or the Bill Tompkins books, you know, selected by extraterrestrials. Those are highlight some of this, you know, more far out space oriented efforts. But I'm focused on, you know, the nuts and bolts here. We got to recreate gravity. They're not going to tell you the secret. You're going to have to grab it yourself.
Do you think we're ever going to see anything like this in, you know, in, literally in our lifetime?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, I would say that. I'd say we're inside 3 years from somebody cracking it open, okay. And really, there's sort of only three ways to change the world, and they all have to do with energy, either gravity control, low-cost portable fusion reactors, which is my day job as the CEO of Electric Fusion Systems. We're working on that. And some way of tapping the zero-point fluctuations of the background vacuum and allowing us to create basically some sort of solid-state device that just puts out electricity. So those are, and when you can do that, you can begin to democratize the world. You can suck water out of the air. You can suck carbon dioxide out of the air. You can build a greenhouse in the middle of the Sahara. You can power electricity. You can eliminate hydrocarbons. You can basically uplift all of humanity in a very real way and eliminate the stress. I mean, there's a billion people that are like starving or don't get enough water. And so, you know, this is a little bit of a sidebar, but, you know, when are the ETs going to show up and say we can join the cosmic kindergarten? Well, how about feed everybody, educate everybody, get rid of all your nukes, and clean up the environment? And when you get that done in 2060, we'll come knocking. And so, I mean, that's my big picture.
Absolutely. So, you know, in the meantime, because, you know, people have seen these craft. Like you say, not all of them are alien, okay? Is this whole thing with the spacecraft program that we have now, you know, with using Virgin and all these different, you know, people to go to, you know, back and forth to the, you know, the space station, is that just like a distraction for everybody?
Well, yes. I mean, I think they're all in earnest, believing what they're doing and working hard at it, and they don't know that gravity has been solved and that there's a better way to do it. If Elon Musk really believed that he could use gravity control, he would be to Mars in a flash and stop all this nonsense with SpaceX rockets. And this goes to the upsetting the apple cart of all sorts of industries, from, you know, in energy, in aerospace, in political and sociological structures, because if it's truly democratized, you know, my impression is that a few talented people in the garage or in a small engineering firm, if they knew the recipe, could make devices. And, you know, the problem with that is that suddenly the Ayatollah in Iran is going to put a 2,000-pound bomb on the White House doorstep in 2 minutes. And so that's not good.
No. No, not good at all.
Yeah.
So, you know, when you think about this stuff, I mean, is it going to be the military that shows it to us, or is it going to be some private company who catches on, like you say, like, say, Elon Musk or somebody like that, who catches on that we do have this stuff, and then they start building this stuff?
Yeah, I think it's not in the interest of the government or the rogue power structure to disclose it. It's going to have to be rediscovered and then commercialized.
Okay.
That's sort of the only path that I see that in a timely fashion to deliver it to humanity. But again, you don't have to do anti-gravity. You certainly could do low-cost fusion, or you possibly could do a device that uses the Kashmir cavities to tap the zero-point energy, or some sort of zero-point energy electric device. If I gave you a toaster that put out 1 kilowatt and, you know, would run forever, that would upset, you know, Sacramento SMUD, Sacramento Municipal Utility
District.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it would upset, you know, Pacific Gas and Electric and many other utilities. So it has to be done delicately. So that's sort of my perspective.
Absolutely. So what's next for you?
What's next for me is, well, I'm doing a lot of work with my AI ufologist book, which is on Amazon Next, which is fairly, there's a tool I created called UFODEX, UFODEX.com, where you can ask any question about ufology, and it accesses basically 500,000 pages of UFO data, books, periodicals, journals, all the quality stuff in my mind that came from my library and my father's library. And I've scanned it and OCR'd it. And it gives, it's not just ChatGPT, you know, for Omni. It's a RAG, or a retrieval augmented system. It's got this huge sort of UFO brain and that knowledge. So people say, you know, what's the ET agenda? And, you know, I thought I knew when I first asked the question, and it came back with 14 answers, and I was impressed, because I only got like 7 or 8 of them. You know, scientific studies, one that, you know, why are they here? Resource acquisition, maybe they need gold or water or DNA from people or other stuff. Maybe it's some benevolent guidance. You know, the Pleiadians are here to you know, urge us to go to the Age of Aquarius or some happy space. And then, or the opposite, malevolent guidance, you know, more of a dark devil approach, where they just don't give a damn. It's sort of an indifferent, neutral way. They can be focused on survival. You know, their planet is dying. Let's come colonize Earth because it's a happy place. And nobody's around in Antarctica, and nobody's going to bother us. And we don't need a lot of space. So, and then there's genetic manipulation, experimentation. You know, there could be, you know, the young ETs are getting their PhDs in anthropology of emerging civilizations. And so they're coming here to study us. So this, and multiple races have multiple missions of different styles and approaches to how to interface with humanity. So I'm finding that using AI is a very powerful way. But for me, it's I'm focused on fusion and you know, doing more gravity control experiments.
Absolutely. So how can people find you, sir?
Well, I mean, you can go. There's a lot of choices here. There's the majesticdocuments.com website, which has all the majestic documents. We really didn't talk about those much. You can go to ufodex.com to ask your question. My books are all on Amazon. Actually, there's a new book just out that like a week ago called UFOs, Who Knows? Question mark. So these are a book of famous quotations, 180 people in all walks of life, religion, astronauts, science, clergy, engineers, presidents, and their profound comments about ufology. And so for somebody that's new to the field, you can slide this book across, and people can, and celebrities, lots of celebrities, can resonate with some people, and say, "Well, there's more to this than I thought."
Absolutely, thank you for coming on. I really enjoyed it. I learned a lot. I mean, that's what's important. We're here to educate people.
All right. Well,
I really love it. I would love to have you on again to talk about the other stuff you have going on.
Yeah. Well, we can do that later sometime.
Okay.
And thanks for your audience and participation, and tally ho, you know, let's keep working at it.
All right, we'll be in touch, okay?
Thanks so much.
All right, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Bye.
Night. All right, yeah, I love it when I get a guest on like him where I can learn stuff. I mean, that's what's important about what I do. I love to educate, even with my ghost hunting. Am I sinking down? I do not have my chair anymore. If you notice, I don't squeak. The chair broke. So I'm on the other chair, which is really uncomfortable. So I keep sinking down. But anyway, I love having guests like him on. I just love it. Okay, tomorrow will be a best of, as I've got some stuff going on. In fact, tomorrow, being Wednesday, I'm taking 2 nights off from TikTok as well. You know, I want to work on this show more and get some more good guests coming in for you guys. Still going through that transition with the internet right now, so everything's coming together with that. So that's like I said last week, that's what's going on right now, is that we're making the transition to another internet company. We're making the transition away from StreamYard, so everything is kind of at its own pace right now. But Monday next week or mid next week, we should be back on track with everything. So that's why I'm taking tomorrow and Thursday off, so I can focus on this show and get people booked and whatnot and start rolling again with it, but I want to thank everybody for coming tonight. I appreciate it, and I'm sorry that it's like that. The past 2 weeks have been like up and down with the show, but like I said, bigger and better things are coming, Like I said, I got my new cell phone, so I'm going to be doing some lives. We're going to go, we'll go stargazing. We'll go look for aliens. You know, we'll sit out on some lonely hill and see if we can see things in the sky. Nancy Mass has been wanting to do that with me for a while. So we have a great camera and everything now to do that with, and the capability, and we can go live doing it. So that's what makes it fun. Okay, maybe Nancy and I might do a couple ghost hunts, go live doing it. So, you know, so things are going to really change, you know, for the better, and I'm looking forward to it. Okay, well, if you like the show, share it with 5 people. If you hated the show, share it with 5 of your enemies. We're equal opportunity here, and we're just trying to get our little show out there, you know, and little by little, it's doing that. I'm also looking forward to getting the broadcast key from TikTok at some point, so we can be on TikTok to thousands and thousands of people, millions of people. So I'm looking forward to that. Also, it is Halloween, and if you want to check out our Boo Crew store, we have some Halloween t-shirts and jackets and things there for sale. We also have branded California Haunts Radio and California Haunts Paranormal Investigation Team stuff. If you want to check that out, the link is in the, below. The link's below. I'll just say below. Not this below, but below in the... and the show information page, okay? So the link is there. Also, our Patreon, you know, we're trying to build up our Patreon as well. Got a bunch of good stuff that, you know, for Patreon members that we're doing. It's starting out kind of slow, but we're getting there. You know, we're getting there, and I'm putting up stuff over there, and there's lots of discounts for events that we're doing and things like that. And speaking of events, I do have a new show launching, and I believe it's going to be the 18th. It'll be Saturday the 18th. I just unplugged something out of my chair. It's going to be Ghost Stories by the Campfire. And the first one, or I hope to continue with it, is 911. So I have interviewed some EMTs, I have interviewed some hospital folks, and I have interviewed some police officers about ghost stories that they have encountered. And so I think you're going to like it. That will be on the 19th. Go to California Haunts Paranormal Investigation, 18th or 19th, I forget which day. Sorry, it's a Saturday. Go to the California Haunts Paranormal Investigation Team meetup and check that out. Tickets are $15. It's a premiere. And it'll be a private room on YouTube. And I'm also going to take your suggestions. I'm treating it like those premieres that Sony and Olin put up. So I want to have your suggestions and opinions as to what you think the show needs and, you know, what direction to take it in. So if that sounds like something you might be interested in, it's a, you know, count as a Halloween event. Go over, check it out off the meetup. Okay? And we will, at some point, we're going to take you guys, we're going to have an open ghost hunt. It'll be up here in Northern California. And you guys can come along. And we, you know, and I'll probably go live with it anyway. But if you want hands-on experience using our equipment, that's the way to go. That's the way to go. Last time we did it was a few years ago at a cemetery. But this time I'm going to get us into a haunted hotel or someplace like that, so we can do the ghost hunt. Okay, so just sit tight, and everything's coming together. Okay, I'll see you guys live on Thursday, and then we will be live on Friday with Anna Maria Manalo. Okay, and that'll be an early show, like I think it's 3 p.m. Pacific. So I'll be live on Thursday, and I will be live on Friday. But I am taking tomorrow and Thursday off from TikTok. In the meantime, I should be on TikTok tonight between 9:30 and 10 o'clock. This is the last night I'm going to be doing free tarot card readings. You know, that's been my practice run for the last 2 weeks. And I've done okay. You know, I've done really good as far as the readings go, but you know, the other stuff will come. So, then I'm going to start charging for readings. So come on over, check it out tonight, California Haunts TikTok. Okay, I will see you guys live either tonight or on Thursday. Have a great evening, guys. Let me find the button. There we go. Found the button.